Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Hanlon, Ryan Oakey in our Motor City studio. Anthony Bellino coming to you from the Radio Bunker. And joining us on the horn right now, he's got the Lions beat for the Detroit Free Press, our good friend Dave Burkett. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Burkett. Dave, partner, how are you, my man? Everything going well?
I'm doing well, Anthony. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's face it. I was doing really well. Then all of a sudden, this thread popped up across my timeline on Twitter yesterday and scared the bejesus out of me. Let's just be real upfront with everybody and kind of what was going on. Because Chris Spielman was speaking to media yesterday morning, and he was talking about the involvement of Sheila Ford Hamp, rearrangement of the office. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of what Chris Spielman was saying as far as, you know, I guess Sheila Ford Hamp's involvement right now with this franchise and organization?
Well, yeah, he said both Sheila and himself had been involved in the meetings that have gone on this offseason, the free agency meetings, the draft meetings. Chris said he had sat in on the draft meetings last month, and that she was 2 days in the offensive meetings and 2 days in the defensive meetings for free agency. And, you know, I think the big thing with Sheila was that she was giving her opinion, when the Lions discussed the free agent plans. And look, she's the owner of the team, right? She has every right to sit in wherever she wants. And I think some people just, when they hear that, you get a little worried about, owners meddling, I guess, and not letting the football people they hire do their business. And, you know, for that matter, I would say, the same goes for Chris Spielman. I mean, he's not the GM, right? So if you want him to be GM, if you want him to make these decisions, then you hire him to do that job. But Lions didn't do that. And so, from my standpoint, I'm a little more comfortable with Sheila Ford sitting there than I am with Chris Spielman sitting in there, because you want Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell and all their, troops to do their business and feel comfortable doing it and not be looking over their shoulder at whoever else is in the room.
You know, and then at 7:28 a.m. yesterday morning, you fire off a thread of tweets on this debate, Dave. And I was like, for me, it's like I'm right there with you. She's the owner of the team. I would want an owner to be very interested in what's going on in the day-to-day operation, not necessarily, pulling the trigger on a draft pick or having a say in, personnel and scheme and stuff like that. Like, that seems a little bit far-fetched, but to have an owner who's actively involved and around the facility and is really giving it their all to try to build a winner, I can appreciate that. And then you said, quote, as everyone here debates what it means that Sheila Ford Hamp is sitting in on some free agent meetings, figured I'd share this story from an unnamed scout about an unnamed team from years ago. Details a little fuzzy as you heard it a while back, but there was the brief synopsis: an NFL owner who had his kids come into the draft room and basically play with the board and pick who they wanted to. That, to me, I mean, you talk about a queasy feeling in my stomach, because I try to stand up for the organization, because look, these are football people making football decisions, and as much as we want to criticize every player who's out there from our couch, they are the ones out there playing that game at full speed. And it's a whole hell of a lot different when you're down there on the field than it is when you're sitting at home watching on television. So there's a certain level of respect that we have to have when we discuss things. But you put out that thread, and oh man, I didn't feel good right away.
Well, look, I don't mean that to be that that's what Sheila is doing. And to be very clear, I mean, look, I think Sheila is watching and listening and learning and observing, and Chris said she's asking questions or she's putting her input in, but I think a lot of what she's doing is learning and again, this is her team. She can sort of do what she wants with it. Look, to me, the issue, right, when owners do this stuff, it's not about that. I mean, it's more about if they do go to that next level that I described in that tweet that I had heard that story of, that's when. And again, it's the right, as I said in that thread of tweets, the scout that was telling me this story, I was kind of like, what? So basically, for people who didn't see the thread, right, the owner and his kids came in and they fiddled around with the draft board, basically making some picks, some guys that they wanted on their team over the years that the scout was working for the team. And, undoing the work of the scouts. And I was sort of flabbergasted too. Like, what? I can't believe this happens. And the way the scout said it to me, maybe just because he'd been around the league and he'd seen it, he said, think of it like, you're a parent, right? Like, you want to get your kids what they want for Christmas or sign them up for whatever sport. Like, that's all that these, the owner was doing. Was, he's a billionaire. So it's a different, sort of toy than that or a different sort of present that he's giving his kids than you and I give our kids, right? And on some like very human level, that made sense to me. Like, yeah, that's all he's doing is trying to let his kids, you know, have some fun or give them what they want. And as a parent, that's what we all do. And again, from a pure business standpoint, football standpoint, that's certainly the wrong thing to do. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that's what Sheila was doing, but that is the most extreme of levels. And I will say this, you know, the other, you know, people sort of jumped on this, like, why is it bad that she's involved or that Chris is involved? And again, I find it fine that Sheila is sitting in these meetings because it's her team. And, you know, I have a little more issue with Chris because, you know, what is his job at the end of the day that still has not been defined by the Lions? But I will say, and I think it's inevitable that when, you know, these power brokers, these decision makers, these people of such influence are sitting in on meetings like that or involved in some of this, it inevitably changes the tone of the discussion or what's being said or how comfortable some people are about, you know, saying or conducting their business. And so I think that more than the fact that an owner may be making picks, you know, a la Jerry Jones, is really, I think, what people sort of scratch their heads at and say, is this really necessary?
You know, it is fascinating. And like I said, I mean, I'm kind of one of those people that says, yeah, I mean, if Sheila Ford Hamp really wants, I mean, why wouldn't you, if you were the owner of a team, why wouldn't you want to sit on these meetings? I just want to hear what people are saying. I want to try to learn as much as possible. I don't think it'd be any different from any of us getting an opportunity. If they said, yeah, you guys want to sit in on this draft meeting? Well, of course we would. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah, I would love to know what the hell's going on when you guys break down film and whatnot. When we look at this, Detroit Lions team moving forward, obviously the NFL draft, we got plenty of time before we can get to there, but one thing that has like officially opened is the fact that teams can now begin to use their designated tags, whether they're transition tags or franchise tags. You bring up the franchise tag, the first name that comes to mind would be Kenny Galladay, and what the Lions are going to try to do at the wide receiver position. You had recently just wrote about how Marvin Jones Jr. is going to try to, you know, find that Super Bowl potentially in free agency, and that's what he wants to do, and try to win that title there, but telling, you know, SiriusXM NFL Radio that, quote, nothing's off the table as far as where he plays next season. So he's kind of up in the air. Dave, what in the world does this franchise do with Kenny Galladay?
Well, I would franchise tag him. You know, I think it's still, you know, possible that they sign him to a deal. You know, we'll see what the money looks like on that. You know, the franchise tags, because of the way the salary cap works and the way that the CBA is, the tag number is going to be down for wide receivers this year. So for 1 year of Kenny Galladay, you're going to be paying, I don't know the exact numbers yet, but, you know, $15.5 million, maybe $16 million, somewhere in that general range. And the going rate for a receiver of Kenny's caliber was, you know, $18 to $20 million, you know, somewhere like that. And that's really what the hangup was with him and the Lions and why they didn't get a deal done, you know, over the summer last year. And so, look, you know, I don't know how comfortable the Lions feel about paying him, you know, that top of market money. I don't know how comfortable he feels about taking a deal that, you know, what the numbers are exactly that he's looking for, if there's a common ground they can find, if he even wants to stay in Detroit right now after what went on last year and losing his quarterback and the rebuilding that this team is going to be going through. But having said that, Kenny Galladay is a really good player. And, you know, he could be very crucial to what this organization and this offense, you know, does on the field. And so I think it's important for the Lions to keep him in the fold because, A, they need some playmakers to be successful. But then, B, that gives them the best options, I believe. And that is, maybe you keep him, maybe you trade him, you know, before the draft. Maybe you trade him come, you know, trade deadline in the fall. I just think the value that you can extract if you look at this if you look at him as an asset from an organization standpoint, there's much more value to keeping him around than there is to letting him go.
At 27 years of age, and obviously last season really hampered and slowed down by injury, and it was one that which, I mean, the whole season last year was just a wash to begin with. But, I mean, when you take Kenny out of that offense, I think that you really started to see sort of his big picture effect. And I don't really know what to make of Kenny Galladay. You know, very excited for where we got him when we drafted him out of Northern Illinois, because I saw what he did in the MAC, you know, year after year to the team that I was working for at the time, Toledo. I mean, he just torched him, right? There was nothing you could do to try to stop this guy. Detroit gets a middle round, and you're feeling feeling really good. He'd be like, hey, this guy could be a diamond in the rough caliber player. Does his age work against him here? Because if he's 27 now, they franchise tag him. And let's say it is around that $15, $16, $17 million mark where it might be a little bit of a discount for a number one. He doesn't necessarily create the separation from corners off the ball, but if you throw the ball up in the air, he'll get that separation off the ground. There's no doubt about it. And it would give Jared Goff an option, almost kind of like, hey, we can get in some jump ball, some jackpot situations where we can throw it up, and you know Kenny's going to have a really good chance to come down with this, and that could present somewhat of a security blanket maybe for Jared Goff, who is entering, you know, a new offense, new scene, new city, new everything here.
Well, yeah, he needs a receiver. I mean, you know, you look at the receiving core, and obviously you mentioned, you know, Marvin Jones is probably not going back, and Danny Amendola, who knows if he's retiring or where he's going or what happens with him. You know, Jared Goff needs a, whoever the quarterback is, they need some people to throw to. And Kenny's, in my opinion, you know, one of the top 10 or so receivers in the game. And, you know, I think the way that he plays, the way that he can overpower defenders, I think that's a valuable asset to have. But yeah, to your point, I mean, look, 27, he turns 28 this fall. It's sort of like, you know, I think we probably talked about this, but as it related to Matthew Stafford, you know, the desire that the Lions had, or you know, the reason that I said they should trade Matthew Stafford, I guess, had nothing to do with Stafford, but more about where Stafford was at in his career and how his window of opportunity lined up with the Lions' window of opportunity. And I sort of see that with the Lions as well. And look, maybe, you know, the Lions, they realize that they're in a little bit of a rebuilding state. And, you know, maybe they think, you know, come 2022 or something, they will be competitive. But if that's not the case, if we're looking a couple years down the road, then you're talking about being at the end of Kenny Galladay's deal. And then you're talking about Galladay being 30, you know, when the Lions are, you know, in the window to win. And then you do sort of wonder, you know, what he's going to be like as a player, or how much, you know, what he does on the field will translate to where the Lions are as a team. So I think those are all things that the organization has to take into account. You know, what they could get in a compensatory pick, where they plan to spend the money in free agency, would they really be getting that third round pick back in 2022? Is it more valuable to have that then than, you know, maybe have some more immediate help in the draft versus what he provides on the field? So there's a lot of things, I think, a lot of factors that go into determining whether to bring him back, whether to sign him long-term, or whether just to let him play on that franchise tag.
Dave Burkett, join us right now. He covers the Detroit Lions. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Burkett. You can find his work in the Detroit Free Press. And Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, have you and I discussed Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff? I feel like we haven't, but then again, I'm like, you know what? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think we probably talked, well, you know, before the trade. I don't think since the trade happened, or, you know, was, you know, kind of semi-official here.
But, okay, your thoughts on that in the return they got for Matthew Stafford? Because looking at Carson Wentz, him going to Indy, I'm feeling really good about, one, getting a quarterback in return and getting some picks as well.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, it's an arguable the Lions got good value for Stafford. I mean, you know, there's a certain part of me that would like to see them get that number 8 pick from the Panthers instead and just get a more immediate return, and knowing, you know, at number 8, you can get a boot to your player. Whereas, you know, who knows where you're picking with the Rams. And if you're picking at the 20s, the likelihood that you get a boot to your player, I think, is, you know, it's not quite there. And I do think those sort of difference makers, you know, you need those guys on your team in the NFL. But again, to get 2 first round picks, third rounder this year, you know, a guy in Jared Goff who, you know, we'll see what he is as a quarterback, but at the very least, you know, he's above average. I mean, he's, you know, he's a starter for, you know, a bunch of teams in this league. So, and he's a young enough guy, you know, has had some success here recently that, you know, maybe there is some untapped potential there. I tend to think that the Lions still need to find their quarterback of the future, and that Jared Goff is probably not him, just again, based on sort of where this organization is. But I'm also willing to give Jared Goff a chance and to, you know, see what he does on the field this fall.
And that would take us, Dave, here to pick number 7. It's still really early, but I took a look at the, you know, when watching the Super Bowl, the first thing that came to mind is, okay, what's really working well for Tampa Bay? They have linebackers that cover sideline to sideline. They will chase you down. They will hit you. They were able to get after Patrick Mahomes, the offensive line. They had some injuries there. They had some issues up front for Patrick Mahomes. He ran for his life for the entire four quarters. And I'm like, finally, other teams and other fan bases, you know, they can get to know, welcome to Lions football. This is where your quarterback takes a snap and then runs for his life for the duration of the process until the ball's either out of his hands or he's laying face down on the ground. There's really not a whole lot of if ands, or buts about it. But I was like, okay, Tom Brady, they have the weapons on the perimeter. They're able to run the football right at Kansas City. Kansas City can't really effectively stop the run. They were like 20th against the run this year, whatever it was. And they couldn't protect Patrick Mahomes. So I'm like, hey, Lions at 7. Let's get a franchise linebacker if Micah Parsons is just standing around there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't hate the Parsons pick. You know, in my first mock draft that I did, I gave the Lions Trey Lance, full disclosure, quarterback, North Dakota State, because, again, I think the Lions – look, I think the most important thing that the Lions need to do in order for this regime to, you know, to get this thing right is to find the quarterback, the long-term quarterback that they're going to build around. And, again, I don't know that that's Jared Goff. I think Trey Lance has all the tools to be that guy. Certainly he's raw and he's far away from being it, but – you know, when you have a long-term plan in place, you can sort of, you know, you have the luxury of developing a guy that has some of those tools. And as much as those other first-round picks, as great as they are to have, I think they only take you so far if you don't have the quarterback. So that's why I gave the Lions Trey Lance my first mock. But look, Micah Parsons, I think he's probably the best defensive player in this draft from the little draft looks that I've done so far. I think there are three really good receivers. At the end of the day, there are tiers of players, right? And Trevor Lawrence is probably in a tier by himself. And then there's going to be five or six, you know, blue chip players. And three receivers might be in that group. And so rather than drop down another group, maybe it makes sense for the Lions to take one of those receivers. And the other thing Chris Spielman said on Tuesday was that, you know, his philosophy on football has changed. And now he sort of believes in building from the outside in. And I know he wasn't speaking for Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, but let's be honest, you know, he's the guy that hired those two. So I would like to think that their philosophies probably align in a lot of ways when it comes to that. So I think a wide receiver could be in play. Micah Parsons could be in play. And I think most importantly, the Lions have to do their diligence on all of the quarterbacks. And if they believe one of those guys, the guy that would be there at 7, can be their long-term future at the position, that's the pick.
For as exciting as it is for fan bases across the country, it is absolutely nerve-wracking all at the same time. And to have to be the person to say, yeah, let's do it. Let's push that button, hand in that card. Woo, glad that's not me. He's Dave Burkett. He covers the Detroit Lions for the Detroit Free Press. Find him on Twitter at Dave Burkett. Dave, my friend, as always, thank you so much for your time, my man. We greatly appreciate you.
You got to stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.